Welcome to Coffee Talk with Shell, where there's always variety in life.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to Coffee Talk with Shell. I have a great show lined up tonight as I'll be interviewing Brian Stanton about his one-man play called Blank regarding adoption. You see, Blank was written and performed by Brian Stanton, and directed by McCarran Kelly, from classroom to confessional, from flamboyant professor to pipe-smoking grandmother, from Oedipus Rex to bizarre inner voice, a birth certificate propels an adoptee on a fantastic and mysterious quest for identity. I think we may already have him on the line. Mr. Stanton, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you great. Thank you so much for being a guest on my show tonight. It means a lot to me. First of all, I think you may know that I discovered your play, the video on YouTube, thanks to the musician Zara Phillips, who did the duet with DMC about a song called I'm Legit, and it's all about getting your original first certificate.
That's right.
Awesome. So do you know, first of all, how she came about your video and your play?
I met Zara. I met her first. I did my show in New York last November, and she was in the audience, and I had met her very briefly after the show. And, you know, I've got since I did this show, I opened it a year ago now. I think April 16th last year was opening night in Los Angeles, and I've gotten involved with some adoption support groups and some national organizations who support, you know, those whose lives have been touched by adoption. And a lot of people said, hey, you should meet Zara, you know, she sings, she's a musician, an artist. And so we met initially in New York, and then I was just in Orlando, Florida for the American Adoption Congress National Convention, where I performed Blank just 2 weeks ago, and she was there as well. And I think...
Oh, wow.
She must have posted my YouTube link on her Facebook, and maybe that's how you saw it. She passed it on to a lot of people.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm so glad she did. And, you know, a lot of my listeners know this, but those that might be tuning in for the first time tonight, just on a personal note, I couldn't think of a better time to interview you because I think I shared with you through Facebook earlier, you know, I was adopted at 13 days old, reunited with my entire biological family since 24, and I'm 36 now. I lost both my adoptive parents in 2008, and today would have been my adoptive father's birthday.
Oh,
and
you're
I have
kidding
British
me.
Roots. No, I'm not, and I would have had, or I do have British roots through my adoptive family. And what's so personal to me that I love about your play that I think is so important is because the sense of identity. For example, for me, just this past week, my life turned, I felt like, into this question of the day, this controversy, because I had many people telling me they did not believe I had British roots because I was adopted. I do acknowledge my other roots, too. But, you know, with the royal wedding coming, you know, the celebration this weekend and all, it was
sure.
a big deal to
sure.
me. So I was like, this is amazing timing with finding you and your play, and I'm just so excited about this interview. So I just wanted to share that on a personal note.
Oh, that's
note.
So cool.
Thank
that's so
you.
Cool, and it's a pleasure to be here, Shell. Absolutely.
Yes.
Very
I'll
timely,
asking,
it sounds like.
Definitely. Things work out in amazing ways. And I do want to ask you several questions throughout the next hour, but in between, I want people to call in. I think we actually have a caller on the line that I'll get to here in just a moment. So 201, hang on. But you can call into the show tonight, 347-215-7225, and ask Brian Stan questions about his one-man play, Blank. And 201-569, you're on the line. Did you have a question? You can go ahead and ask away.
Hello, Shell. This is Chris Cagliardi from Youth Worldview, and hello to you, Mr. Stanton, and it's a pleasure that you would be on tonight to talk about your play. It's a thrill. Have you considered about putting your play onto Broadway, and if so, have you been pitching it around to many theaters around the New York area as well?
You know what? Well, if you have any connections and you can get me on the Broadway, please do and let me know.
Really?
I am returning to New York for the International Fringe Festival in August. I should be doing maybe 5 or 6 shows between August 12th and August 28th. While I'm there, I would love to pitch it to anybody who who would be willing to consider a little Broadway run or an off-Broadway, you know, in some of the more intimate spaces there as well. It would be fantastic.
Anyhow, do you have any other plays that you're working on as of right now that that we could all know about and be ready to hear in a few months or so, besides Blank?
Right now, no. I'm full out blank right now. I'm doing a run in Kansas City this summer. Then, as I said, I'm moving on to New York immediately afterwards. I have some ideas that I'm writing. I am writing, but nothing to speak of and promote yet.
I also want to know how has the general response been to the play Blank? Has anyone come up to you and said any remarks about your performances and so forth, and how your play is being received?
Yes. I ran for 8 weeks in Los Angeles, and word spread pretty quickly. I was able to. It was originally 6 weeks, and I extended it 2 more weeks. Word spread just through word of mouth, you know, and then I started to bring in some reviewers, some critics who gave me some really stellar reviews, and that has helped me move forward from there. I did a little stint in Dallas, actually, believe it or not. I know you're calling from Fort Worth, or you're based in Fort Worth, right, Shell?
Yes, I am, and I wish I had known beforehand so I could have seen it. You have to come back.
I know. I'd love to. I did about 5 shows in Dallas. I've performed several areas around Southern California, like Carlsbad and Burbank, and in New York and Orlando, and now I have Kansas City and then a return to New York coming up. So I've been pretty busy.
Well, here's another question. Have you ever thought about thinking about coming to do your performance in New Jersey anytime soon in the future besides New York?
You know what? New Jersey would be fantastic. I've met a lot of people. Some people actually came over to New York from New Jersey, and so I met and spoke with them, and there is a huge adoption community in New Jersey. I know NJ Kerr is there. I'm sorry?
And Zara Phillips. Isn't that where Zara Phillips and DMC are, New Jersey?
are they actually in Jersey? Yeah, maybe they are. I'm not too sure.
I think so. I'm pretty sure they are.
but there is a big, like I said, an adoption community there, and also a big group, you know, who are fighting for adoptees' rights to their original birth certificates. I don't know how many of your listeners know, and this could be another good discussion is, you know, all adoptees have 2 birth certificates. I actually know a couple people who actually have 3. but
really?
And in many states, in several states, I think there are only six states where adoptees can get their own, have access to their original birth certificate, their original birth records. All the other states.
Can I intervene on that?
Yeah.
I want to clarify on that because of my experience. Because I know my biological family, like I said, I've known 12 years, and I know both their date of birth, their names, all that, you know, and they had changed the law here in Texas a few years ago where I was able to request my original birth certificate. But with all that said, I was still sent back first 3 times, 3 attempts, no joke, my, you know, adopted one. Even though I wrote everything correctly, they just kept sending the adoptee one. So finally, after I kept fighting for it, I got it. So even with all that, you still sometimes have to go through a lot of loops to get it.
It's amazing. I have a friend who lives in New York, and he is, you know, he obviously has a relationship with his adoptive family, but he's also reunited with his entire biological family, with his entire birth family. And he had both of them, both families, write the state their letter, say, please let my son have his original birth certificate, and the answer is still no.
Wow. With both
it's really – it's a fascinating issue, and it boggles my mind. I don't understand it. So,
me either. Well,
yeah.
Chris, I appreciate you calling in. I'm going to go ahead and disconnect.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you guys
so
much. RockTalkRadio.com, Jersey Justice 29, Youth Worldview always. Please listen in, sir. I hope that you'll get a chance to listen in soon.
Yes, he has
a great
show too, definitely. Thank you, Chris. Have a good night.
You too.
Oh, sorry, Chris. I didn't mean to cut you off. I think he was just saying me too. Oh, goodness. But those are some good questions, though. He always has great questions when he calls in as well. I kind of want to go back to the basics, if you don't mind, Brian. Like, first of all,
no, please.
What made you decide to do this play? And secondly, what in the world made you decide to do, like, 10 characters, a whole one-man play all by yourself?
I've always been fascinated with the solo show, with one-person shows. Mm-hmm. And I went to grad school at California Institute of the Arts. And I had just seen a one-person show, and I just struck up a conversation with a director friend of mine, you know, telling my interest in one-person shows, and telling her, you know, I'd like to do one someday. I'd really dig that genre. It's interesting. And she said, well, what's your story? You know, a lot of people either do autobiographical stuff, some people do biographical stuff. And do you have someone that you would like to write your show about, you know, some famous person, some historical figure? It's like, no, that's too much work. I can't do that. She said, well, then what's your story? And I said, I don't have a story. And she said, well, maybe that's your story, the fact that you think that you do not have a story.
Ooh,
and it made me think. Since then, I've always been obsessed with identity and me not really knowing who I am, and just this huge obsession with identity. And this was just before I was reunited with my birth mother.
Oh, my goodness.
So soon afterwards, like 6 months afterwards, I was reunited with my birth mother and went through all that, kept a diary, you know, a journal, writing everything down. And I was 24 when this happened. And about 4 years ago, I said, you know what, I'm going to go back and revisit all that, and maybe it's time to do a one-person show. I will keep the theme of identity going, but I think the reason why I was so obsessed with identity was because the fact that I was adopted, always wondering who I was and how I'm always trying to fit in with all these groups and trying to genuinely connect with people all the time, as well as being an actor, you know. I put on a lot of masks on the stage as well as in life, you know. And the fact that I play all these people and all these characters, and I know exactly who they are and why they're doing what they're doing and why they make this choice and what's behind it, but who the hell am I, you know?
Wow.
So that was kind of the kickoff point, and I used the backbone of my adoption story, kind of a the play really takes place around the three or four month period where all that information came flooding over me. You know, my birth mother's name for the first time, seeing her handwriting for the first time, hearing her voice for the first time, you know, and what does all that mean? What does that mean now in regards to who I am?
And that's awesome. And also, on the characters, it's 10 different characters, correct? Is that still correct?
Yeah, 12. Well,
12,
yeah.
Excuse me. I'm glad I asked. I was reading some of the past reviews, and I wondered if you changed anything since from 2010. So I guess my question then next would be, I mean, out of a one-man play, you choose so many different characters, which is amazing because I read a lot of great reviews about that, how, you know, you transition so much that it keeps the audience just very intrigued the entire time. But how did you narrow it down just to those, though?
I kind of went, well, editing, first of all. I think I had a few more characters in there, and I had to cut it down.
Oh, wow.
Everybody that I speak to has had a big effect on me in my life. First off, my mother, isn't it, as well as my father. You know what, for the sake right now, and I don't mean to offend anybody, I'm going to say my adoptive mother or my adoptive father and then my birth mother or birth father, just so we don't get confused on who I'm talking about. Is that cool?
You are so on cue because I do that every day.
Yeah.
I have to because people never know which one I'm talking about if I don't.
Right,
so I do that
right.
every
and
day.
Since, exactly, exactly. And since we're on the subject, I'll differentiate the, both
sure.
of them just so you know who I'm talking about. My adoptive mother is in the show, and there was – actually, this is the one that's on YouTube. She, you know, she had information for me. And that was a huge turning point in my life. So that was an obvious character that I had to that I had to have in the play. otherwise, there were, you know, I go on this journey of, you know, who am I? Is it my genes that make up who I am? Is it the environment that makes up who I am? And I, you know, I go and visit a professor. I go and visit a priest. You know, I'm visited by my wife's grandmother. You know, so it's all these characters that have said certain things to me in my life that had a lasting effect on me, and that that I have, I think, grown from, and just that I've pondered my whole life. So that's pretty much how the characters came about. You know, of course, the priest, and I have this old. An old theater teacher, an old theater history teacher who had a PhD. He just knew anything and everything about life. You know, there are these old wise characters in the show that challenge me. You know, they challenge me and my thoughts on who I am. So that's, you know, and I have a lot of fun with them because I know them and they're dear to my heart. So it's a lot of fun playing these people that I love and that have had an effect on my life. And there's also a couple characters that I cut out just because it wasn't necessary. But I, you know, there's a part of me that wishes I kept them in too. You know, a lot of people. I'm very lucky. A lot of great people have been in my life and have come in and out of my life that have affected me for the better.
Have any or most of the characters you play actually, you know, come to see your play?
Yes.
And how did that go? that would make me so nervous.
pretty much my whole adoptive family has seen it.
Wow.
My mom and my dad right. and you know, my brother and sister, although I mentioned them in the play, they're not actual characters in the play. They love it, you know, and I knew they would. It's a lot of fun. They were afraid, as well as my birth mother when she saw it, but I'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
I think some of my family was afraid that it was going to be this really deep, dark thing, you know.
Oh.
And I think they were really delighted to see that there actually is a lot of humor in it as well. And my brother and sister loved it because they knew almost every character in the play, you know. So they were sitting in the front row just dying, you know. Even when nobody else thought it was funny, they're just dying, having a blast. So it was a lot of fun, and you know, it opened up a conversation between my adoptive mother and I, which was great because she, I think, by seeing the show, she understood me a little bit more. If that makes any sense.
Definitely.
Yeah, you know, the first thing she gave me a big hug, and then after she said, I didn't know you were feeling a lot of those things.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And it opened up a little bit of a conversation, you know, which has been great. Now, secondly, my birth mother saw it with her husband, who's a great man. He came to to be there for her, just
aww,
in case.
Support.
but she was definitely worried. And you know what? I actually have a funny story. When I was promoting the play for the opening night in Los Angeles, I, you know, was sending out postcards and fundraising letters and all that, you know. And I made one for her, for my birth mother. And I was like, oh, you know what? I shouldn't mail this yet. I haven't told her that I'm doing it. I mean, she knew that I had written it and that it was probably going to be performed, but she didn't know that there was actually a date. So I said, I haven't called her yet. And I said, no, you know what? Let's mail it. I'll mail it, and that will make me call her. And I mailed it, and I completely forgot to call her.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it was awful. I felt terrible, and I realized it like 3 days later.
Oh,
and
no.
I immediately call her. I leave her a message. I'm like, hey, I'm doing my show. I sent you something in the mail, but please call me and let's talk.
Oh,
I called her home and herself. And then about 4 hours later, late that night, she calls me. And she's like, Brian? I said, hey, did you get anything in the mail? And she said, yes.
Oh,
and I
my
said,
God.
Okay, I meant to call you. I'm so sorry I didn't call you. Are you okay? And I don't know if you've seen
okay?
Have you seen the graphic image? The graphic image is me without a face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my face is completely blanked out, and that's what's on the postcard. And I said, are you okay? And she said, I think so. I had to call my husband, and I said, Brian's doing his play, and he doesn't have a face, and oh, my God, what have I done to him? So... It was really funny. So I had to explain everything. I'm like, it's about identity. Don't worry about it. Anyway, but she came and saw it, and she was really frightened that it was going to be really dark. And I actually had my stage manager. I gave my stage manager a box of Kleenexes before the show. I said, go give that to that woman over there. And about a minute later, the stage manager came back with the box of Kleenex. And said she's already she has a box of her own. it was a very powerful night, and I didn't sleep. Mm. I was so nervous.
Imagine that. I mean, that's a lot of courage, seriously, to share your personal story and then in front of your own family.
I know.
I know. Biological mother. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yes. It was really. It was a great experience, and, you know, the people, the rest of the audience that were there that night got a little special show, and they probably didn't even know, you know.
Right.
But after the show, you know, I use an alias name. I use a fictitious name for her in the play. And afterwards in the lobby, you know, I was all nervous. Did she like it? after the play in the lobby, she was introducing herself to everybody as Beth, which is the character that I have named her in the play. So it was really wonderful. And that, too, has opened up conversation between us as well. So, you know, it's family has seen it. And I think it has brought us closer, you know. Not that we were so far apart, but it has brought us closer. Yeah.
That is awesome. It sounds like it's helped not just you, but like you said, you know, the family on both sides, as well as I'm sure many members from adoptive parents, to biological parents, to adoptees themselves, you know, like myself. Oh, I think we have another caller on the line. Hold on real quick, okay? We got more questions along the way here. 323-309, did you have a question for Brian tonight?
I saw his play, and I thought it was really, really good. And I had one question for Brian was, if you ever delved into the possible spiritual ramifications of being adopted. You know, the notion that if you're in a place and we choose our lives here, if there would be a logic for someone choosing to be adopted.
You know, someone asked me that question. That is such an interesting question. And I don't know that I have the best answer for it. Have I thought about that? Absolutely. I actually had a conversation with someone about that about a month ago. You're saying if we as souls have chosen where we are right now.
Yeah,
right?
if there's any truth to that. If there is, of course it's unknown, but do you think there's a, if you had to choose your life, if there would be a purpose for taking that path, as opposed to any other path, you know, like you get to be somebody who's strung out on drugs and you go, well, who would choose a life like that necessarily?
Right.
You know,
right.
But there might
right.
be a lesson that they spiritually are after, you know?
Right. Thank you for your question. Oh my goodness. This is great.
It's esoteric, but yeah.
No, well, you know what? Kind of the end of my play is kind of esoteric. you know, looking back, yes, obviously looking back, the road makes sense. I am very fortunate. The family around me has certainly affected who I am now for the better, and I hope that I have done the same to them. And, you know, coming into reunion, I know that it was the right time. It happened at a perfect time, just like what Shell said tonight. You know, whoa, this is a perfect timely thing for me to interview you. You know, when I look back on things like that, you know, maybe it was a purpose. Absolutely. I can't argue that there isn't some other kind of spiritual higher purpose mm-hmm. for this to happen. Now, when you look back at my conception, and Shell, I don't know if you know this, and this may be a big jaw dropper, and I don't mean to give this away, but you know, I'm a product of a rape. Mm-hmm. So when you start talking about, you know, is that a purpose? You know, was it meant to be that she was raped? I mean, that's a horrible thing to think. However, did things eventually somehow work out? For me, I think so. For her right now, I think so. That's not to say that we didn't go through any emotional trauma at all, you know. Mm-hmm. She is, you know, got back on her two feet, has a wonderful husband, two sons, and was able to go on with her life. Like all of us, I mean, you know, we all experience difficulties and challenges. And that's what life is, you know. I guess, can I cuss?
Go ahead.
I just think that shit happens, you know, mm-hmm. and beauty happens, and without the shit, we wouldn't recognize the beauty. And certainly without the beauty, we'd just be stuck in this shit, you know. mm-hmm. And that's the duality of life, you know, without silence. We wouldn't know sound. Without sound, we wouldn't know silence. And I, you know, out of, well, let's look at the lotus. The lotus comes out of this really murky, dark, swampy environment, and out comes this gorgeous flower, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's beauty in that, you know. That beautiful flower came up out of all that shit. And hopefully, through any trauma or any challenges that we all face in life, we can find a way to not grasp onto this shit always, but to recognize that inner beauty and that inner essence, to move forward, to grow out of that, as the beautiful flower that we all are, really. So, you know, in regard, I don't know if that answers your question or not, but.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Very good answer. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Thank you so much. I really dig those questions.
I'll go off and I'll keep listening on the show.
Oh, great.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you so much.
We really appreciate calling in tonight.
That's a question I need, like, you know, with a bottle of wine, sit down with you, and we can talk all night.
I know. I mean, honestly, as we're both reunited adoptees, I can tell it sounds like you get that question, too, and I know I've had similar questions in my lifetime about that since my reunion. It's really interesting to hear what kinds of questions people ask, and I was wondering, you know, what are maybe some a few other examples of questions that you've been asked after people see your play?
Specifically about adoption or about the play itself?
Well, both. So if you can do both categories.
Well, you know, going on the adoption thing, I'm surprised that I'm still doing it. First of all, the play itself. Mm-hmm. I'm I'm amazed that it has touched the adoption community so much. Obviously, you know, I'm just telling my life, and it struck a chord with people. So that always sparks questions and conversations about people's own personal experiences as well as mine. It always brings out stories in from other people. You know, you'd be amazed how many people are touched by adoption. I think Evan B. Donaldson did some study that it's around 60% of people in the United States are in some way touched by adoption. Personal questions like that always come up, but I always people will stand up and just tell me their story, and I'm never amazed, I'm never surprised.
heard so many things, by I'm sure.
Just by all the different stories out there. It's just incredible. Let's see, what do people ask me? Is that what you're at? I didn't even answer your question.
Yes. What do people ask you, like, about your adoption story, and then about the play itself?
They always ask about the characters. You know, are the characters true? Are these real characters? and yes, they are. They definitely are. I do milk them a little bit. You know, I play my grandma, my adoptive mother's mother. She is a mix between herself and my great-grandma. My great-grandma came over from Italy, so I gave her the Italian dialect and everything like that. But my grandma is the one who smokes a pipe, and she is a birth mother as well. So, you know, there are things like that where I'll touch up the characters a bit just for dramatic or comedic purposes. Mm-hmm. People ask, Has the play changed at all? And yes, essentially no. The play is essentially the same, but I do I have made subtle changes. You know, things that just make a little bit more sense to me. You know what, Shell? Since I first opened the show a year ago, I've learned so much about myself, and talking with people and also getting involved with the adoption community, I think I understand my play more. Does that make sense?
Great. Yes, definitely. You're learning and growing at the same time while you're doing the play. That's awesome.
Right. And that's been kind of surreal. I would hear somebody else talk or ask me a question and tell me their experience. And then all of a sudden something I say in my play clicks. And I'm like, oh, that's why I wrote that line.
Wow.
Like, oh, my goodness. You know, so I think I've certainly become closer to the piece, if you can even imagine that. and I understand it more, and I'm learning more about myself. So, you know, it's been a good personal journey, too. Even though I was always taught to never use acting as therapy, it's kind of been that.
Oh, no, I disagree, because I always say creativity is the best outlet for anybody. So
it is, isn't it?
If that's your outlet, let it be.
It is. Let it be. Let it be. That's right.
Like the Beatles say. Well, how has your personal adoption experience then affected your family life now? Aren't you a dad now?
I am a dad. I am. Mm-hmm. I have two lovely girls, Malaya and Delawan, 9 years old and 7 years old. And you know what? It's been such a beautiful weekend here in L.A. It's blue sky, 80 degrees, and we've been able to spend it outdoors. Do you have kids?
Nice. Well, not yet, but soon. Foster care adoption, we technically started a few months ago, did respite care, and then we're going to start doing... Yes, and then this June we'll start being foster care parents ourselves. Yes.
Oh, wow. Well, congrats. And that's great, because you're coming from a great point of view and
all perspectives.
You will be open and understanding, and that's so important. That's so important.
Yes.
Anyway, my girls, you know, there's always birthday parties to go to, and we had two birthday parties this weekend, and so we've been enjoying the weather outside. It's been great. But, Shell, that's wild, because I am now living for the first time with blood relatives.
Right.
You know,
I wondered about that, a different perspective for you. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. And it's fantastic. You know, you asked me of how my adoption experience has affected that. That's a big thing. It's a big thing for me to have two children of my own and living with my own blood relatives. Some people may not think that's a big deal, but it really is. There's something inside me that I feel it's a special thing.
Definitely. Well, you didn't grow up with people that look like you, so was always my joke, it's a foreign concept to adoptees to have people in your family look like you. And now you're a dad and you have children that look like you, I'm sure.
it's totally different. It is. And
amazing.
That's not to take anything away from my experience growing up. That's not it at all. But it's just the fact, it's the biological fact, and that's special. And, you know, we are biologically and spiritually connected, and it's sometimes I feel like I've gone throughout my whole life looking for that genuine connection, you know what I mean? So to have them here is beautiful, and kids are great. You know, they are the true sages. You know, they are my true gurus. They teach me a lot.
Do you talk a lot about adoption with your daughters?
They understand, and they have a relationship with my birth mother as well. You know,
right.
And I think it should be. It's because they are. She's family. She is my extended family, so to speak, I guess. And I think it's important for them to know that. And you know, they have cousins on that side who are their age as well. You know, so I'm not gonna.
Oh wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, which is cool. It's family is a big thing. There's so many different kinds of families out there today, and this is our family, you know? So they know exactly who my birth mother is, and they call her Grandma with her first name. I don't want to say her first name right now, but they call my adoptive mother Grandma, you know, right now. So it's one big happy family, you know?
That's awesome. And, you know, we were talking in the beginning of the interview about our roots. You know, you have the adoptive roots, the adoptive roots, the biological roots. Like, I have Irish roots through my biological family and British roots through my adoptive family. And it's funny how people have different perspectives, especially the ones that are not in the adoption triad members, you know, adoptive parents, biological parents, or adoptees. And so I wonder, especially with you having children now, like, how do you consider – I guess my question is, what do you consider are your family roots, like all sides, and then also how do you honor your roots with your children? Does that make sense? Like, do you acknowledge all of them, or what, or do you do anything to acknowledge any roots?
The funny thing is my adoptive mom and my birth mom both have major Italian roots.
Oh, okay. You looked out the same route.
As far as that goes. My dad is like Irish, and I think he's German in him as well, you know, kind of the typical American mutt. but, you know, there is one whole side of me that is still blank that I still don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a mystery. I guess I did kind of luck out on that part with the Italian roots, you know. And you know what's great, Shell, is when I was first reunited with my birth mom, she gave me this huge family tree, which is just so cool to think about, you know, and to look at, to see where people came from and how big the family is and stuff. So, you know, I could see all the names that are in the family, and that's important to know. That's another thing that I think may be taken for granted for non-adoptees, you know. I thought that was really special to see.
Definitely. It's definitely a big deal. You know, I know right now my biological mother's, her, I have to think a minute, cousin. Her cousin is doing a genealogy research for that side of my family, and I cannot wait to see it.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm so excited.
Oh, yeah.
But, You know, another thing I was thinking about, because I want to ask questions about Adoption Journal and about the play, but I don't want to give away the whole play, so I'm kind of going back and forth so our listeners know. But another thing I wanted to ask you is I've noticed a common trend with adoptees in my case that I've known. I always forget the word, forgive me, I'm going to sound so naive here. It's like, is it insynchronicities? I can't even say the word right. It's like when you look back in time and you see all these coincidences. Like, for example, my birth mom and I worked at the same building probably for about 6 months before we were ever reunited. I mean, things, and I have so many of those type of things that happened in my past that once the reunion happened, I look back, I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? There was all of these paths laid out right in front of me and had no idea. Have you had any of those types of experiences?
Is that amazing? I can't believe that. That's so cool.
Isn't it?
Not like you. No, I haven't. But, I mean, the biggest thing is, I mean, you know, but, you know, you have those thoughts. When you're growing up adopted, and I'm sure almost every adoptee out there can relate to this, is you're looking around, you know, you're looking around going, gee, I wonder, they kind of look like me. Maybe she's my mom, or maybe my mom is my teacher right now, you know, in class, or maybe my mom just, you know, just served me my meal at the restaurant. I mean, you know, you have those thoughts as you're going through life. Or even your father, you know. So I can't believe that that actually happened to you. That's so great.
Yes. I mean, I felt like I was one of those news stories that you hear all the time about the mother and son that worked at Lowe's together or what. I mean, that really does happen. But, you know, at the same time. Oh, go ahead. Uh-huh.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt. Please.
Oh, no, that's fine. I was just going to say, you know, because I know you have like the Oedipus Rex type character in the play and all. And this is so embarrassing to admit, but I've got to share this because it really, like, shocked me when I first realized this. You know, like you're saying, as an adoptee, you spend a lot of your life looking at people and wondering, like, before I would even date a guy, I would be like, okay, I would literally ask every time, are you adopted? Because if the guy said he was adopted, I wouldn't date him. I mean, I was that scared. I mean, that awful. And the funny thing about it, this is kind of freaky, okay? So I don't want to freak him out, so heads up. But one day, I'm looking at this picture of my husband and one of my biological brothers. I have two brothers and a sister through my birth family. And I had no idea how much this brother and my husband look so much alike. And it still scares the heck out of me when I realize it. I don't know why. It just, like, how did that happen? And so one of my friends said, genetic predisposition. I'm like, really? I mean, I went out of my way to ask every boy before I would date him, are you adopted? Because if you are, I'm not going to date you, just to make sure I did not marry into a, you know, birth family. And then I end up marrying my husband, who looks just, not just, but very similar to one of my brothers. And now, I haven't told my brother this, even though I think it, because I don't want to upset him, not that brother, but the other brother, is marrying a girl that looks very similar to me that he met, you know, back before he knew me. But, oh, my gosh, how does that happen? I wish there was some explanation for that. I don't know.
That's interesting. Well, you know, there is that genetic attraction. And I know it is, you know. Hey,
really? You think so? Really?
No, there's definitely a genetic attraction, but sometimes that can get misconstrued as sexual attraction, which you got to be careful about. You know, but no, absolutely. And you know what? That could be another big argument to let us have our original birth certificates so that we know. You know what I mean?
Yes, I love that.
You know?
I can't believe it. You know what?
You know, with all those sperm donors out there right now, too, I mean, this is a whole nother world. You know, there could be a lot of relatives out there who, you know, you never know.
Right.
That's so. If anybody out there is listening and you're thinking of donating your sperm, give your phone number and your name with it.
Please, seriously, it's true.
Those synchronicities that you're talking about, it's very common. I mean, you hear stories about twins who were separated at birth and then they meet each other. They're wearing the exact same thing. They both own the exact same kind of a dog. You know, there's all this stuff out there biologically, you know, that attracts people. Now, the big thing in my story is that my half-brother and I have the same name.
Really?
So that's crazy. Yeah, yeah.
That is crazy.
Yeah, so she named her son Brian, and she didn't know my name was Brian.
Wow. Maybe that goes back to the maternal instinct, especially with biological mothers. I still believe with all my heart that they have that maternal instinct even after they relinquish their child. Because I mean, have you not had a lot of people tell you different stories about timing of something? Like, you know how you hear they'll say a mom senses something's wrong and they'll, like, wake up at the same time that maybe a car accident or something's happened with their child. Do you think
sure.
birth moms have that instinct too?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it's also, unfortunately, it's clouded
right.
with, you know, if they feel shame, if they feel guilt. You know, it's that has to be one of the hardest things to do, is to relinquish and surrender your own child. You know, it's a difficult thing to do. So absolutely, I think it's even, some of that maternal instinct could be even, you know, hyper aware of it as well. But that's a difficult thing to do, difficult thing. And they're told, right? They say, oh, just, you'll give away your child and you'll forget all about it. You know, that doesn't happen at all.
Don't forget about it.
Not at all. No way.
And do you think compared to, like, I don't know, when you and I were given up to nowadays, do you think anything's really changed for the better, or do you think it's pretty much still that?
I hope it is. Shell. I think things need to be more open. And when I say open, we need information. As adoptees, we need our information, and we just need to know the truth. We need to know the truth, and it's just that simple. If you focus on the truth, then I think things will get better. Now, but, you know, back in the 50s, the 60s, 70s, and even into the early 80s, you know, if you're a teenage woman and got pregnant, especially a white teenage woman who got pregnant, you would be shipped off to an unwed mother's home. Or shipped across the country to your great aunt's house, because it was they thought it was a thing of shame. You know, you don't do that, and no, you'll give your child up, and that's it. And many birth mothers in that era did not want to relinquish their child. And you know, that's a sad thing. But nowadays, that's all coming out into the open finally. And, you know, there's the thing that they call open adoption, where the adoptive mother actually has a relationship with the birth mother. Although that's been called into question as well, like how open really is it?
But I think what
is happening now, and I'm seeing it, and a lot of people that that I've gotten in contact with because of blank, we all agree that something is happening. You know, the truth is being told. People are listening to our own stories and say, oh, well, how do we make this system a little bit better? You know, everybody out there has their idea on what is best for the child, you know, and to where it's kind of clouded and it's not always best for the child, you know.
I agree. What
is best for the child? You really do have to focus on that. And the only people that can really talk about it are the children, right? And
right, but then
now that
children.
You and I are adults, yeah, now that you and I are the adults, but we still have that child in us, don't we?
We feel like we have to tell them, hey, those children.
What is important? Yeah, what is important? And Minnesota has a great organization called AHA, Adoptees Have Answers, and, you know, their whole mantra is adoptees are the true experts on adoption. So it's amazing. I was at a meeting recently, and they had this piece of paper, and there was a circle in the middle of the paper that had child written on it, inside the circle. And then all around it, there were like 35 to 40 other circles all around the children, you know, that were adoptive mom, adoptive father, birth mother, birth father, lawyer, caseworker, social services, foster parent, you know, had all these other judge, had all these people who were making the decision for that one child.
That was a homework assignment we did in our foster care class. No joke.
Oh, was it really?
What I'm talking about.
I
sure do. They had to start with a circle and do the other circles outside of the support and who all's involved, and it was so overwhelming, to say the least. We were all in tears by the end of that class session that day. I mean, because it is. It's just overwhelming to see all of that, you know?
It is.
Really
it is.
What it goes into. that for the each child affected by adoption.
And it's overwhelming for the child, you know.
That's what breaks my heart.
Emotionally. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brian, we still have 10 minutes remaining, so there was two things, if you don't mind, I still wanted to ask. Before we wrap
Absolutely.
Up, I definitely want to have you give a shout-out so people know how to contact your website and all that. But before we do that, I wanted to ask, because I kind of have this theme I do usually on my interviews, I ask at least one controversial question, even though we kind of already have seemed like some of these might be considered that. But the one that I thought of for you tonight is, I don't know if you saw the news story about the girl who faked her pregnancy. Did you hear about that?
No.
Okay, I'm trying to remember where. I can't remember offhand, but there was this girl in the news, and she was saying that she did it. You know, they have that Teen Mom show on MTV, which, just to kind of side note, but just to point out that on that Teen Mom show, there was one couple that did give up a child for adoption, and then the others, you know, kept theirs. But anyway, this girl, what got me was that this girl has faked this pregnancy for, I think, about 6 months. So what she did was, she said it was like a project. She was like a straight-A student and all this, senior in high school. And she goes up and gives a speech to the senior class, I think it was, and takes off, like, the fake, you know, pulls the shirt up, takes out the fake whatever, baby bump, you know.
Oh,
and,
my gosh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what really shocked me the most, what I just couldn't believe, was it was only like 2 or 3 people knew the truth the entire time, like the principal, her mother, and the boyfriend. Not even the boyfriend's parents knew that it was fake. They, you know, they had to keep all, and even her siblings, they all had to, you know, they had them all think this was for real. So when she gave the speech, she talked about the reactions she received from the students, you know, the gossip, the rumors, the talk, all of that. And I want to know, what is your thought about all that, you know, about someone faking a pregnancy and the reason? And, I mean, isn't that something? You've got to look it up online later. I'll try to find
it. I will. I do have to look it up online. I don't really know the information to get too into it.
Yeah.
But she was she doing it for some social
experiment or something, like a project for school, I think. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I've got to look it up and put the link on your Facebook wall so you can look into it later. But it was...
I'd be interested to hear what everybody was saying and if people were telling her what to do and what. Wow.
Isn't that something? So, yeah, that's
right,
not a controversial question, but we can get back
I'm
to that.
I'm sorry. Oh, my goodness.
Here later online. No, that's okay on the next segment. No problem. I just thought that was, you know, because we're talking about adoption and everything, and she was, you know, she's a teenager in high school, and a lot of teen moms do give up children. Not all of them, you know, but. That's common
for
that young age. So anyway,
Well, you know, well, going back to what you were saying,
mm-hmm.
you know, things are changing. It's not this horrible thing now. You know that a teenager gets pregnant, because it does happen, and I don't think they would ship her off to an unwed mother's home these days, right?
Yeah, that's what happened to my birth mom. Yeah, which side note for our listeners, very ironic you talk about fate and timing, that you and your wife were from Fort Worth and I was, you know, born and adopted in the Gladney in Fort Worth, where my birth mom lives. So very ironic. And the Gladney fought for adoptees' rights, which is a whole other story, you know.
Some people
love her and some people hated her, because I loved her. I don't think that she meant for our names, our original birth certificates, to be disclosed. I think she was trying to protect us and have illegitimate taken off our original birth certificates.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, as you know, there's that controversy now where it's a struggle to get your original.
Right.
But
right.
She did try
right.
to fight for adoptees' equal rights. So I don't know. That's
right.
a whole other segment.
It is a whole other segment. And my play is not at all political. It's just a journey.
My heart.
And my story. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can testify, because I've only seen the one scene, the video on YouTube. So if everybody go to YouTube.com and look up Brian Stanton, Stanton, and then put the word blank, you know, name of the play, and that video will come up. And it's amazing. Like, I watched 5 minutes of it, and I could already tell that you go from the serious to very funny. So it does not get too dark at all. Definitely is just a perfect balance. I was really impressed by that. So
oh, thank you.
Definitely. Hope I get to see all of it in person. Please come back to Dallas-Fort Worth. And on that note, will you go ahead and give a shout-out with your website and contact info if anyone wants to, you know, ask you more questions after the interview tonight?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can visit my website at www.thebrianstanton.com. That's thebrianstanton.com. You can email me at Brian, B-R-I-A-N, at thebrianstanton.com. Yeah, and you can also like Blank on Facebook. Blank has its own page. So like Blank, and you can get any, you know, future news and updates on where Blank is and what Blank is doing now.
And what is the next date again, next venue?
I will be in Kansas City June 23rd through July 10th, performing Thursdays through Saturdays at 8:30 and Sundays at 3 p.m. At the Fish Tank Theater. All that information will be on my website as well as on Facebook. Then I'll be in New York for the International Fringe Festival August 12th through the 28th.
Great. Well, Brian, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. I can't tell you how much this particular interview means to me on a personal note and professional level. So thank you so much.
Oh, great, Shell. It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, wishing you and your family the best, and may your play be around for a long, long time so you can keep affecting people from the adoption community. I know you're helping make a wonderful difference for all of us.
Oh, thank you so much, Shell. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a wonderful week.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Take care. Once again, you've been listening to Brian Stanton, and we've been talking about his one-man play called Blank About Adoption. Don't forget to check out his fan group on Facebook. Just find the word Blank and Brian Stanton. And also go to YouTube.com once again and look up Brian Stanton and then Blank. And you can see that video, that scene. It's about 5-7 minute video of a really great scene. It'll just kind of give you a gist of it. I think a little over an hour altogether of the play, but and like I said, there's 10, I think you said you initially start with 10 and then added a couple more, so like 10 to 12 characters now in the play, and he plays all of them, so you will not get bored. There's so many transitions within it. But I hope you've enjoyed this interview to get a behind-the-scenes look into his life and his perspective about his personal story journey as well as the play. So don't forget to email him and ask him your questions and share more comments with him later. I know you'll never get bored talking to him. It's an amazing story. Thank you all again. I'm wrapping up this segment, and I'll be tuning back in just a few minutes as we will be doing the current event segment from 9 to 10 tonight, including, of course, the After Live Royal Wedding discussion. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So don't forget to tune right back into the show for the second hour of current events. Thank you so much. Love and peace. This is Shell. Not exactly signing off. I'll be right back again. Bye.